Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
What's good, internet? Welcome to the latest Waypoint 101 episode. I'm your host, Austin Walker. We are digging into the game Zombie U, aka Zombie. We're going to the London Underground and prepping. We're prepping. We're preppers now. Welcome to the Prepper Podcast. I'm your host, Austin underscore underground Walker. The zombies can't get you if you live underground. Joining
can we,
me,
can we even do this podcast without Vinny Caravella?
I'll call Vinny and I'll ask him to send me his bug out bag, which is an item you can get, which is an important item in the game Zombie U. That is the host of our co-host and also survivalist Patrick Klepek.
Hello,
Patrick K Bar Klepek. Also joining us, Zombie Attack himself, Rob Zachney. Zachney is short for Zombie Attack.
There will be no warning.
Wow.
I'll just be on them with a club so quickly. They won't even have a chance to react.
Rob Zachney, of course, coming to us live from the front against the billions of zombies. They are billions, has prepped you for Zombie U, I hope. Or maybe vice versa, given the order of play, maybe.
Vice versa. I would say Zombie U was the fire in which I was forged. Mm. Mm-hmm. I had to unlearn a lot of bad lessons that, like, not serious or unrealistic zombie games, like Left 4 Dead, more like Left 4 Trash, taught me about fighting zombies. And now I know the true way. Ammunition is precious. A cricket bat is your only friend.
Yeah, true. True. It turns out the only people to survive the England apocalypse are pro cricket players. You got to know about sticky wickets if you're going to survive the zombie apocalypse. So we played Zombie U, and as a reminder for people who maybe listened to past Waypoint 101s but missed the article or the conversations we've had about this episode before, we're just going to do a single episode. We kind of picked a spot in the game, the Tower of London attempted escape, and we're going to kind of like, that's the spot at which we all definitely played up to. I actually played a little bit past that, but we're going to talk openly about spoilers throughout the whole game. And you know, you should feel free to listen to this, whether or not you've played the game, whether or not you've gotten to that point, as long as you're cool with those spoilers. We're going to keep that up going forward. We're going to kind of basically decide at the top, like, oh, what's a game we want to check out? That opens us up to a bunch of games that would be too long for us to do a Waypoint 101 with. But of course, we're leaving open the possibility that maybe we decide to play something that's longer and decide, hey, you know what? Let's do a second episode for this, actually. And we'll take that as it comes, you know? But first, like, let's just talk about Zombie U. What do people think about that? Rob, Patrick, what were your thoughts after putting some time into this game?
I played it before, so I'm curious, as someone that has not played it before, Rob, like, what you took or didn't take to the game, especially in light of, for me, having experienced the game back when it launched in Wii U, I have certain, I guess even nostalgia, even for just that's not that long ago, but it's long enough to revisit a game like this. So I'm curious, Rob, kind of like what you took from it to kind of start off.
Yeah, I mean, I played a little bit of it on Wii U at a friend's house, but it was like I damn near bought the Wii U for this game, but I could never quite bring myself to pull the trigger. I mean, I absolutely adore it. I mean, to me, it really feels like almost the closest we're going to get to like what a John Carpenter movie, like a game version of a John Carpenter movie would feel like. It has the feel of like a great B movie. It's kind of crude. There's a little bit of like good jank, but also it's like very consciously wearing the slightly like toxic, you know, distressed aesthetic really, really well. And so, you know, right from the first, it just feels uncomfortable and oppressive and unsettling in a way that I think really makes a strength out of what could be the game's weaknesses. And I was never able to resist that. Like, I admire so much both the aesthetic and then the pacing and the combat dynamics, where it is a game where you were consistently just one mistake away from death.
Yeah, I would say one of the things that I found sort of interesting revisiting it was that zombies are kind of hard to make scary anymore, like just through like sheer saturation of media. And even if you aren't interested in horror, like zombies are so predominant through all sorts of media that like I think we have sort of a cultural saturation of our sort of our ability to sort of be scared by them as a creature. And yet, even though I was revisiting Zombie U, I like found the way that they structure their creatures to, even though I've like gone through the intro of that game probably half a dozen times, whether it's through like streams or like revisiting the game or playing the PC version to cover that when it originally came out and they ported it, the zombies are incredibly effective in this game. The atmosphere is still incredibly effective in this game. And I think part of this, because the you know, as we'll talk through, the gameplay works in concert with the aesthetic in a way that heightens both of those things. But even just on like a very like basic level, like I find, although like the actual design of the zombies isn't anything altogether unique, like the movements are erratic and creepy, that work both on a mechanical level because it kind of messes up your flow when it comes to sort of like figuring out how you're going to attack them with a cricket bat. And then it's also the kind of thing that there's kind of the echoes off in the distance, the noises they make are like the kind of screams that kind of happen idly in the background, I found to be still unnerving now. And so, yeah, I guess my initial impression going back to the game was actually I was impressed that aesthetically and sort of in terms of tension, it holds up remarkably well, given how fast horror, especially as a genre, loses its ability to sort of imbue you with that feeling, because often horror video games are sort of inexorably tied to technology in a way that some other games maybe don't lose their atmosphere nearly as quickly.
Yeah, I definitely want to say that, like, I think the atmosphere of this game is one of its selling points, and it does a lot with a little. There aren't that many, you know, areas in this game all said. You know, you think a game from Ubisoft, you tend to think, like, okay, this is going to have a great deal of breadth and variety in terms of just, like, space. It's going to have a lot of space, and then hopefully it will have a lot of breadth and variety. This game doesn't have a lot of space, but it does still manage to communicate a lot of different kind of communities and areas in London to you, because each of those spaces does feel distinct in terms of its geometry, in terms of its basic look, and in terms of like the enemies that you come across. And some of that's really simple. It's like fighting the palace guards when you're at Buckingham Palace, versus kind of fighting, you know, people who are clearly dressed to go to work when you're just out in the streets, versus fighting some people in like military or riot, you know, police gear, elsewhere. But at the same time, I actually think that I had the Rob Zachney binary domain experience here, which was it just didn't click in the way that I want it to click for me the way it's clicked for y'all. I can see that game. In fact, I can see that game partially because I've played other versions of it here or there, you know, maybe not even to completion. But as a number of people wrote about on our forums, this game had me wondering if I should revisit Dying Light, another zombie game, another post-apocalyptic zombie game that has been on my back burner for way too long. Or there are elements of it in which I can easily immediately point to State of Decay and say, oh, this did the thing I wish that Zombie U did. But primarily the biggest one for me is just I wasn't that I can count on one hand the number of times I was scared, and I think those moments are really good, or the number of times that I felt like the combat was hard for me to not hard for me, engaging to play with, you know, in which I was being careful about where the enemies were, in which I felt like the tools at my disposal were fun to use or interesting to use. And those big ones for me across both of those are like very big set piece moments that I think were handled really well. The bit with the chopper at the very end of the section that we've decided to play through to, the kind of Tower of London escape sequence, is really cool because it's like the first time I felt overwhelmed. I actually died in the Tower of London to something incredibly cheap and not that moment, as the only death I had in the game, which is like a zombie in a tunnel that I couldn't back away from quick enough to not get hit, and it like monster closeted, like it wasn't in front of me, it wasn't on my radar, then it was there and it hit me and killed me in one hit, which is a bummer. But the zombie sequence at the end of that, where there's just like a bunch of them closing in on you, is really cool. The boss fight against, there's like a zombie, I don't know if either of you got there, but did you get to the school?
I've finished the game. And the school is an especially strong.
It's a
moment.
Really cool place because it's so compact compared to the rest of the world. Like you're used to these kind of big open courtyards and city streets that give you a lot of wiggle room, and suddenly there are just zombies everywhere on the stairwells and in these like tiny cafeteria rooms and in the basement. And then you have this boss fight against a zombie who fucks up your radar, and who kind of teleports around. And that fight was really fucking cool. And there's like one or two other moments similar to that, I think the fight in the arena, it was really, really good because it's very well designed to push you to your limits. But I just never really had that experience of, you know, across the whatever 12, 15 hours I put into this thing, I never really had that experience of feeling like I was, managing combat in a way that was particularly not just challenging, but again engaging. Like I didn't feel like I was counting my steps, so to speak, the way I was hoping to. And I think part of that is like shows up in the fact that I only died once, which means I only got to engage in the kind of like loop of lose a survivor, go find the survivor once. And then the biggest surprise for me was I didn't know that when you died, the zombies you killed stayed dead. Because when I went to go get my body back, I was just like walking past this empty level where there was nothing between me and my body again. And I felt like that somehow broke, you know, I'm not just looking for Dark Souls here, but it broke the feeling of like, oh fuck, I fucked up. This is a problem, because there was no difficulty in getting back to where I was previously. I just waltzed up to the crawling zombie that killed me once and hit it in the head. I literally could instant kill it because it was not a difficult zombie. It was just like a random zombie.
You have had a very strange version of playing this game, because I like every time that I died when I played this game originally, and even when I died a couple times this time, I didn't get nearly as far this time around, but mm-hmm. I have a deep remembrance of that. Like I guess I had more of like the atypical, or like the typical experience they would want you to have, where it's like when I did die, it was because I like misjudged like a swing, got hit once, then right. Everything built on top of one another. So when I did go back to try and seek out like my backpack, like there were four zombies right. there, and then
and
I
didn't have the stuff you had.
Right. When you respawn, I think you respawn with a pistol and the cricket bat and the cricket bat and the flashlight, and then the pistol is the most like common weapon you can come across.
You
a can't second
drop
time.
That pistol. That pistol's with you forever. I tried.
I was trying to remember exactly how that worked.
But then like I had a crate the whole game filled with other weapons I couldn't bring with me anyway. So when I died, I was like, oh, I'll just use this other shotgun. I'll just use this other assault rifle or whatever. So I never felt like I was at. I think I had like the reverse. What's that? The reverse like shooter problem, like the like a side scrolling shooter, where like you know if you're playing Life Force or a game like there or R-Type or something, where it's like, all right, if you fucking die, you lose all your power ups and you're fucked. By the time I died, I'd already stockpiled so much stuff. I was a prepper. Like every time I went back to base, I dumped all my stuff into my bag.
Yep.
And so like. My next character came out super prepped, like, okay, I have a ton of weapons, a ton of ammo, a ton of healing, so going back out there was not a problem, you know? And then I got there expecting to have to fight through the same horde again, and then didn't have to do that. And I think that's fine. Like, I suspect I had an atypical experience, and not because, I think I just got lucky, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you roll the dice 100.
It sounds to me like you're just too good for this game. Like, no, but I mean,
and also too too cautious and too preparatory in a way that like allowed you to avoid some of the situations the game expects you to kind of fumble into. Like, I had this great moment, which I remember exploring this when the game first came out and then forgetting it can happen, which is that I died during the tutorial this game. So like with
first time I played it, same thing.
So when the game opens, it's like there's zombies and there's a dude yelling at you over a radio. It's like, hey man, you gotta get away, and you're supposed to basically at this point like learn how to move to look around and to hold and to, you know, click in the stick to run. Well, in my mind, I just had to click the stick to start running. I think because of Monster Hunter, and what you have to do is hold the stick to start running, and you can run pretty fast in this game. Yeah. Once you actually start sprinting, but I screwed that up, and so what was happening was that I turned around the corner, got to the ladder that I clearly had to get up to keep going, and a zombie would pull me down from the ladder and then attack me. And I turned around, and there were 7 zombies, and they're all just slowly tearing apart at me. And then in the intro, 30 seconds into the game, you die, and then it cuts to, you know, the zombie logo as a, you know, they clearly were aware that, like, they expected you in some ways to die during that intro, and so that they found, like, a clever way to, like, still do sort of the title card.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
And then you wake up again in the, you know, the actual prepper thing, and the game just picks up like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, and we should set the stage just a little bit here. So the entire game is based out of this like safe house, basically, that the voice over the radio and the person who's going to be the voice in your ear for the entire game, a.k.a. the prepper.
The prepper.
talk about a gratifying survivalist fantasy. and the guy is spooky in the way that hardcore survivalists can often be. But so everything is based out of this safe house, and that's where you store your equipment. But your survivor itself is expendable, and I for sure died the very first time I played the game in that tutorial as well, right at the ladder in the exact same way.
Very good.
And it's a really effective way of, like, the game driving home. Your survivor is not you. Your survivor is not the narrative vessel for this game. It's just a tool, basically, being maneuvered around by the prepper. And when one survivor dies, you take up a new survivor and continue on with the main mission structure and narrative of the game. And it's all set in this, post-apocalyptic London, except it's very much a, what is the way to put this?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's an endearing collection of like London stereotypes.
Yeah,
it's like
it's endearing for us, like, as Yankees who maybe are not just like looking at this like postcard version of post-apocalyptic London it feels like these zombies are in cosplay sometimes.
And it feels a little bit like the way that like often, you know, the major cities portrayed in video games are American cities. And often those are developed not necessarily by, or the way like New York is portrayed,
the mountains
by, like,
of Chicago and Watch Dogs.
Yeah, 100%. Like there's like it was actually kind of interesting to have that sort of license on, or artistic license, maybe me stretching it on a different city, because yes, it does feel just like a postcard, but in a way that kind of made me laugh.
But where, yeah, and speaking of laughable, where this game starts to really spread its wings and soar, let us say, is that all the systems failed. Obviously, like, the government failed to keep anyone safe. Their quarantine zones, they failed. It all went to hell in the predictable fashion that zombie apocalypses do. But all of this was prophesied.
Oh, yeah.
By John Dee, spy advisor to Elizabeth I. And
the original 007.
Exactly. And crucially, the queen herself, the English monarchy, was the primary bulwark between England and we are talking about England more than the UK here. It was the primary bulwark between England and the zombie apocalypse. Like, the queen is a major, like, offstage character in this narrative, which is hilarious. Yeah. Like, this is a version of Britain where, like, the monarchs are carefully monitoring and doing things, you know, throughout the situation.
It's really funny. I definitely was, like, very eye-rolling about this whole story. And then a fan, Craig, wrote in to say that something's really interesting about Our Way Point 101s. I don't know if either of you caught this. But we now have played two games written by awesome British comics writer Anthony Johnson. Both Binary Domain and Zombie U were written by the same person. Craig says, Johnson is very prolific in comics, and folks might have seen his name recently, as he was responsible for the graphic novel The Coldest City, which was adapted into the Charlize Theron action thriller Atomic Blonde, and he worked on Dead Space 1 and Dead Space Extraction 2.
What? This guy sounds rad as hell.
And so then, like, I was like, oh, okay, I get all of this weird John Dee shit. This is so post-apocalyptic comics, British comics. Like, I can see it so clearly now next to an entire subgenre of comic stories. And it started weirdly in that context. It started working for me instead of putting it into a different zombie context for whatever reason. Just like, oh yeah, this is a comic book story. John Dee prophecies. Sure. Why the fuck not?
I also love that the prepper who, like, constantly reminds you that, hey, I called this shit. Yeah. This is why I was prepared for this. Like, it's nice in some ways to have a story where, like, you know, the conspiracy guy was right. InfoWars called it. Fucking zombies, like, we're coming, and we should have gotten ready for it.
Is it nice, Patrick?
Well, hold on, though.
In terms of, like, a twist on the character, like, there is something to at least, for once... Maybe they had a point.
Okay, but I would actually say, so it's actually kind of a poignant thread. You uncover it through, like, news clippings and then personal
letters and diaries, yeah.
Yeah, this guy used to be he used to be part of this, like, secret society, the Ravens of Dee, whose job was to make sure that they kept a lid on all this shit and got the country ready for the coming zombie plague. And so he's the guy who's saying, like, basically as loud and as often as he can, like, don't forget, we know this thing is coming. We have evidence that it's coming. We need to get ready and we need to have a plan. And basically by him not shutting the hell up about it and continuing to sound the alarm, like, it kind of comes clear that everyone just got sick of his shit.
Yeah.
And, like, basically ghosted him out of the Ravens of Dee. He tries to warn the queen. The prepper is this guy who gave up everything trying to sound the alarm about this, you know, coming apocalypse. And so there is kind of this really spiteful nastiness to the guy because, like, from his perspective, everyone had their chance to listen to him.
And now you're just fucked. And now everyone's fucked. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, he's antagonistic to the notion that there is a way out of this place, that there could be a cure. And so whenever you are – or that it's worth helping anybody. You know, we actually got a really good response from one of our fans who wrote in – or who didn't just write in but wrote a blog post about this, Owen Kettleson, who I think actually wrote about the last Waypoint 101 game we did too. And I'm not going to read the whole post. You can find a link to it over on our forums, discourse.zone. You can find the Zombie U post and find his link out to it there. But Owen writes there's an excerpt. Success in Zombie is something that is passed from one character to the next. Every time a player character dies, the player must guide a new avatar back to the recently deceased one, kill it, and loot their important items back, after which the new survivor can continue on as if no death had ever taken place. Mission items, gun upgrades, and backpack upgrades all carry over to the next interchangeable player character. It's a true team effort, but this is where Zombie gets thematically indecisive, because simultaneously, Zombie tries to be the ultimate conspiracy theorist slash prepper fantasy, and can't have it both ways, as the game's plot argues for the lone wolf isolationism, while all the mechanical design emphasizes the collective power of the many. Owen kind of explains how narratively throughout the game, there are all these moments where you help people, and when you do, it leads to failure. So that's like someone calls for help and it turns out to be a trap. This guy needs you to go get him go get meds for his wife, and it turns out that when you come back, he's a zombie and it's a trap. Basically, anytime you try to help someone, you're offered a way out, and you try to climb the tower and get to the helicopter, and a flock of birds destroys the helicopter. Like, again and again and again, narratively, it all falls apart. But also in the actual gameplay, you're constantly actually working with all of the past lives that you played through to secure a cure and escape and save the world. And I think that tension is actually really interesting, because for the prepper, you know, he has his spirit broken when no one listens to him, and then he stops listening to other people when they say, we can fight this thing. And I kind of wish the game was a little more, you dug into that maybe a little bit more. Maybe I'm asking too much for Zombie U to be a narrative tour de force. But
I think this game is like accidentally interesting story wise, yeah. And like often feels as though it was like you can see the pitch of this game like pretty clear, like the PowerPoint version of like the game they wanted to make when they were told, hey, you have to make a game for the Wii U, and then it's like, oh right. Let's put we got to make a story for this. Like, why are there zombies? And they just sort of happen to come up with, and this is not to take away from like what I do think is like interesting, like sort of narratively about the story, but it feels, you know, incredibly tacked on in a way that like I almost can't. I respect as far as the game goes, but don't necessarily fault it for not going any further than it does.
Sure.
I mean, the scene where you go to the gas station and come across that guy. I thought I was hallucinating that entire cutscene.
Yeah.
It is like such a, like it so feels at times like this game was basically done, and then someone from Ubisoft came and visited the studio and was like, "Great, so you know what's your narrative? What's your story?"
Right.
And then everyone sort of looked around and was like,
"I've been reading these comics, and the author's great. We could get this guy to just stitch something in here for us."
Yeah.
I think that stuff is all interesting, and I think it doesn't necessarily, I guess here's my actual complaint is that the mechanical side of the story is not as complex as I wish it was either. So, here's another quick note from someone in the forums, Harry Tomlinson, who had a bunch of comments, but one of them was, it would have been really cool if each new character had some small bonus depending on their profession in life. +1 to weapon skill for a police officer. Better healing items when used by a former nurse. Bonus armor if your builder still has their hard hat and steel toe caps. My understanding is there is some of that actually in there, from looking at the wiki, that like certain characters do start with an extra gun or more ammo or, you know, a healing item or something, but there isn't a lot of it. And
no, it's pretty light.
One of my favorite games of the last decade is State of Decay, which leans way hard into this. And this game was never trying to be a State of Decay. It was never trying to model like a home base filled with NPCs and like player character relationships and stuff.
But no, this is just like sort of like sprinkling on top of like the zombie game they
totally
made.
Totally. But I could imagine a version of it where instead of having one character, you have three or four that are randomly chosen, and after each time you come back home and save the game, you have to switch to another character or something, and then they each have a different ability or something like that. Like, I can imagine ways in which they could communicate that notion of like, you're just a random person who the prepper found and led to this HQ, and now this group of people has to go out there and solve it, or something like that, where they do feel like unique people and not just the face I am right now, you know?
It's also a game that is hurt slightly by playing it in the way that we have, which is late after none of our friends are playing, because one of the unique parts of the multiplayer of this game, I don't know if this carried over into the ports, but this was definitely true of the Wii U one, where I believe the way the mechanic worked was that when your friends died, they populated the world in your game.
Oh, cool.
So that the idea being you could not only come across, you know, like let's say you died and all your shit was with that one survivor, and then suddenly you're totally fucked. Well, you increase your chances of being able to find like some good equipment, because right. you like the items that you find on random zombies, like, aren't particularly good. But the ones that you might find on a friend who died in the game might, like, kind of, you know, allow you to kind of turn your game around. And, like, I thought that was, like, I never experienced that because I, like, largely played the game ahead of, like, the launch of the Wii U. Right. But it was one of those, like, it's a game that, and you know, it's a game that would have made, I think, a really cool sequel. Like, there's so many, like, I really like Zombie U and a lot of what it does. Like, there's a reason it's, like, one of my favorite sort of zombie games of all time. But I also look back on it with some regret that because of where it was tied to on the Wii U and because it was a platform that a lot of people didn't really get on board with, especially at launch. Like, maybe they came to it later when, like, the, you know, the Mario games were coming out for it. But generally speaking, it's a game that kind of missed a lot of people. Right. Because I think a sequel could have gone in a lot of directions that would have been profoundly interesting. And they could have done some of the stuff that you talked about.
Apparently there was also the Dark Souls, the Soulsborne style message system in the original game where you could leave messages on the walls and on the floors using icons that you could see when you went into the, like, scanner mode, which would have been so cool. I would have loved to have seen that stuff, actually. And like, again, that's kind of a bummer, but speaks to a larger question about games like this in terms of archival and, like, revisiting them. Because maybe some of those little things would have been enough for me to come away being like, man, that was a really novel and interesting experience. But
no, I don't think so. Like, you just didn't die. You didn't die enough. Like, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, like, fundamentally to this experience, like, you, like, the game whiffed on, like, making you experience more, yeah, like, suspense and tension. Like, that is, like, all the other things that the game didn't click for you, I think, would have clicked had that initial part come
but
together.
Think about how much more I would have died if I was always busy looking for messages from internet people. I would have just been so much more vulnerable. But offline, once you go offline, you're so much safer. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, for me, I think, like, for me, this is very much a game that lives and is at its best in those moments where nothing has happened, but there's, like, the looming promise of something about to happen.
Right.
Like the thing I remember clearest from the run-up to Buckingham Palace, when you're trying to break into the palace, is you go to this army barricade that was built up around the palace, and it's all basically you know, containers and trailers and barricades and tents. And it's this driving rainstorm. And this, again, tremendous audio and visual design. Like, the few lamps that are burning in the area completely blow out. Like, the entire way the game looks has a very early digital camera aesthetic. So, like, everything is grainy as hell. Like, it looks like you're looking through a slightly, like, flawed lens. And then, like, bright light sources completely overwhelm you know, the sensors, and so it just completely blows out wherever the light source is. And then there's all, like, the rain hammering against these you know, tin containers, and it feels like you can't hear anything. And I remember, like, and you have to keep going through, like, these narrow little, like files to get through from one part to the next. And for me, like, and this is where this game was at its best. It wasn't when the zombie burst out of the room or I hit the trigger and then suddenly bunches of zombies started coming into the area. It was those moments where, like, I'm standing in a clearing and I'm safe and I've cleared it and I'm, you know, there's nothing to worry about. And I'm staring down, like, a dark, apparently featureless corridor towards something I need to get to. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that for me is, like, that's Zombie U. It is that moment of anticipation and dread and this feeling that, like, once you go in there, you have no situational awareness. You won't be able to, you won't have freedom of movement and anything could happen and you have to be perfect. That for me is where this game lives.
There was this moment I had when I played the game originally, which was as far and away my sort of most memorable death was there's a section, I think you go through the sewers, or some sort of, like, sewer system or something like that. But anyway, like, there's a section where you had to, like, cross a bunch of, like, kind of, like, rickety wooden planks. And
yeah,
there's, like, really steep things below you. Like, you kind of just have to make your way across. And I was like pretty confident. I don't think I died in the game other than like an early death that like was largely inconsequential. But this was like the point where like had a bunch of shit, was feeling confident, was like, kind of moving through the game. And I remember going across that rickety pseudo bridge. A zombie kind of came stumbling out of nowhere. I looked over to it, backed off, and instead of backing towards like an area that I could, I just backed right off of the plank, fell down, immediately died.
Right.
Made my body irrecoverable.
Right.
All the stuff was immediately gone. And it was one of those like thematic, mechanically, like,
that's like
felt
a,
like yeah. felt utterly realistic in a sense of like what would actually happen yeah. in this scenario if this was actually play out.
It's your own anxiety.
No.
It's your own fear. It's your own. Like,
you turn around, right. you twist your ankle, you fall off, knock your head, and like it's just over. And it was like shocking and like scary and infuriating. But like the more I looked back on it, was like that is exactly like the kind of moment I wish the game had more of. It like made the game for me in a lot of ways
yeah.
because of like these sort of snap like what. Look, back off, boom, like just all over in a matter of like 10 seconds. And it's, yeah, it's just the game. If you have those moments, which are like, it's tough because like the game, it's very scripted in a sense. Like it's not like really dynamic, like the creatures are where the creatures
right.
are. They don't have like big AI routines that you're going to be playing around with. And so it's like, when you kind of walk into their set piece, like, if, you know, and this is kind of what you ran into, it's like, if you break the set piece, then, or don't react to it in a way that maybe they're hoping to prod, like, it doesn't work nearly as well. With the exception of, like, the one, like, you know, when you go, is the school different than the children's?
Playroom. That's the place. Yeah.
Right. Which is like, and that's the one moment in the game where they deliberately script out a whole lot of
yes.
like the scares and what they want you to encounter. It's the one time where it's like a very traditional horror game.
Well, and so then it explodes at the end in a way that did get me very close. Like, so I'd say like while I only died once, I did have a number of moments where I had close calls, and the closest of those calls was from beating that boss through getting back to the safe house in that zone. Because so you get through that that fight, and I think you end up getting the thing that lets you unlock card scan doors by scan or card swipe doors by scanning them. And on the way out, the prepper calls and is like, "Oh, there's a bunch of zombies coming. Get out of there!" And in all of the ways that you got scared and fell off the back of a thing, I got, you know, startled by the amount of zombies who were on screen suddenly, and was making bad plays, and was like not managing my back, was not making sure that there wasn't a zombie behind me, was not making sure that I had a clear third direction to go to, and ended up getting kind of like very close to killed at one moment. And what I ended up doing to get out of it was I ran into a zombie so that it would grab me so that I could use the zombicide that would kill it instantly. And then that freed up a pathway for me to run down and heal really quick. And if the game had like seven more of those moments instead of one or two more of those moments, I would think I'd be way higher on it, even though I didn't die, because that like that exchange, and then it ends up going out into this courtyard, and then you have to kind of wait as a door gets unlocked by the prepper for you. And again, I was like overwhelmed and weak and like running behind cover and like really just trying to like spin my wheels long enough for that door to open, and almost got killed again because of my like over ambition, because I was being too aggressive and not defensive enough. Like, that stuff did work for me, and I just wish there had been, one, I wish there had been more of it, and two, I wish there had been cause for me to dip into the tool bag a little bit more. There's a letter from, or a post on the forums from Jade Kiwi, who says, "Zombie U is obviously trying to have this really mechanics-focused philosophy for gameplay, with the mechanical representation of tools and equipment and looting, and the way that the prepper is largely showing you around for places where you're supposed to find tools. I'm not sure if it's heavily implied or outright stated that I'm supposed to return to these places, but it does seem like but it doesn't seem like there's much point in leading me to the location of the supermarket if I'm supposed to end up dropping a couple of planks and flares I was carrying to have surplus plus energy drinks on the way out than I had than to use them to heal from the dangerous zombies that nearly killed me. The reality seems to be that the game wants me to move through corridors, even if these corridors are in what's supposed to feel like more like an open building. I'll admit, secret passages and the like do make these places feel more open. That doesn't quite do enough to distract me from how rubble and the equivalent of missing door handles prevent access to what feels like natural routes for exploration. This game seems like it has intentions split between wanting to be a survivalist sandbox zombie game, closer to DayZ or the Stalker games, where you're taking care of your equipment for when you need it, versus wanting to be a linear story with set-piece encounters against enemies you have to improvise to overcome, like The Last of Us. In short, Waypoint, why should I plant a landmine if I have to go back through this corridor? Why would I board this door if I'm going to have to go back through it? It's not like the zombies are going anywhere. I think that is like a big part of why I didn't engage with landmines and flares and barricade boards and all the other stuff that I could have used for fun, but never really felt like I needed to. Did either of you use landmines or barricades or any of that stuff?
When I was looking back through my review of this game, I specifically pointed out one of my most memorable deaths, apparently, which I don't remember, but I remembered very well at the time, was that I was experimenting with a landmine, put it down, used a flare on a zombie, and then walked forward onto my fucking landmine. I'm sure I took out some of those zombies with me,
fuck around with it.
Yeah, I did because, like, in reviewing a game, probably, if you feel like your job, whereas I think largely with this game, you can, like, really lean on the cricket bat. Yes. and, like, a pistol. In my original run, I put all of my points into the pistol because the pistol ends up being your base weapon with survivors, no matter what happens to the rest of your equipment, and you find pistol ammunition really abundant in the game. So it was like, put all the points into pistols, and then you're going to be in a pretty good shape.
Totally.
I think this falls on one of those things that I would have loved to have seen a sequel like riff on and do more with, because you can see like the outline, the sketch of something that could be a lot more interesting than what it is, which is more just, hey, you found a landmine. Do you want to like try and use it because you like want to go pick up that med kit?
As opposed to
being part of like a larger, like ultimately, like I remember playing this game and going, the three things that matter in this game are the flashlight, the cricket bat, and the pistol. Like everything else is superfluous, and the game doesn't necessarily do a really great job of arguing why you should even engage with the rest of it. Once you have these sort of like base level tools, and you know, if you're dealing with a boss and stuff like that, it's a little bit different. But yeah, like there's a Zombie U 2 that which is a bad would have been a bad name.
Yep, Zombie 2
for that. That really like leaned into giving you more tools and like a more dynamic enemies that I think would have been an opportunity for the game to create more of those tense moments. Because even when I played it originally and when I went back and replayed it, I mean, I probably died a handful of times, but it really, I think in my heart of hearts, like the version of this game that is better is where you are constant, like where the game is inventing ways to push you back down the hill. Like it's a problem if you can climb up the resource tree the way that you did. Like, I mean, granted, like that's tough for games to figure out the balance of because like you don't want to punish players too much. But I think I would have preferred a game that found ways to, even if arbitrarily, like, yo, like other survivors raided your fucking place and like, you lost half your stuff. Like, if there was just like a way that like that pushed back on your ability to hoard in order to tilt the balance of the game, I wish the game was doing
some
more.
Sort
whether
of
it was through
AI
killing
director
you,
or
yeah, or just like there was just a random chance that like your home base got fucked up. Like maybe because like you could imagine a sequel where you had to invest resources to protect your base, and it's like, well, if you're protecting for this, then you're not protecting for that. There are just ways that they could have checked the player, because I have that habit too. Like any survival horror game, I end up having way too much shit at the end. Any Resident Evil game, I have all of the herbs in the world,
right?
Because I just didn't fucking use them. I never use a rocket launcher because, right, well, I might need that rocket launcher later. Well, as it turns out, like, I just should have used the rocket launcher at some point,
right,
to make a different sequence easier for myself.
Well, I literally ended up with my home base inventory completely filled. I had to throw away flares at the end.
Sure, yeah.
Because, like, I'm not going to fucking use, or planks or whatever, because I knew I wasn't going to use those. I would much rather sit on top of this extra ammo for a gun I'm not using than a flare I'm not using. So, yeah, it's a tough thing. Rob, if you could make a zombie, U2, what would you add to it? Either from combat or design or something else? What would be your big addition?
Oh, I would 100% just go in the stalker direction. This thing wants, like,
yeah,
this thing wants to be urban zombie stalker.
Mm-hmm.
And I say let it. Like, that's where I would go, is I would keep the, like, so it's even structured similarly to Stalker, where it's not open world. It's, there's a lot of, like, there's a central hub, and then there's a lot of, like, small, like, wide levels, sort of, you know, connected to it, mm-hmm, that you go. And each zone has its own character and challenges. I would probably just expand the size of those zones and open up the game a little bit more. And that's probably about as far as I would need to go. Like, obviously there's refinements I'd want to see. I'd want to see maybe narrative a little more baked in. I might want to see a little more mechanical variety. But ultimately, like, for me, the balance this game is striking, the note it's hitting, fundamentally works. There's not that much that I would need to change. I would just want it to be, you know, maybe the same but more so, or just a little more Stalker-esque.
Yeah, I think I'm there with y'all. I think you know, maybe a difficulty, not a slider even, but something like the Left 4 Dead AI director, or the Celeste or Way of the Passive Fist style multivariable, like, difficulty changes that you can make, to where I could be like, you know what, give me more zombies, make it feel a little bit more like Dying Light, so that I can't, like, there's a point at which my strategy of line them up and knock them down, make sure I have good range on them, that I'm managing their distances, would fall apart because they.
I don't want to put that, shouldn't be like, I'm glad that those sliders would exist if things, but I don't want that to be on me.
Ideally, it's the game adjusting because it sees that I have found an optimal.
Like, if you have, like, style, 50 shotgun shells, it would be great if the game was seeding enemies to force you to
shoot,
right?
Those,
like,
if
suddenly you're encountering soldiers that have armor, yes, that is only pierced by, right, shotgun, like, they, right, like a smarter version of this game in a sequel or something like that, like a spiritual successor, which I'm always kind of like hoping one day they do, would, like, incorporate things like that. That's like, all right, if you're going to hoard all this shit, we're going to force you to use it
yeah,
in order to progress.
Yeah. You're going to have give me the Far Cry 2 guns jamming. Make my cricket bat. What happens when you hit your 300th zombie with the same cricket bat and you just hear it splinter? And you're like, oh, fuck. Like, I don't have my main weapon anymore. Would be so good. Rob, sorry, you were going to say something.
No. I was just, like, fundamentally, though, I didn't have these scaling problems that you had. Like, I feel like, to some degree, this discussion is becoming about a really idiosyncratic playthrough.
I will say, I want to be clear. Like,
I'm with you. Like, I didn't have any of these problems playing the game.
The forums are filled with people saying that permadeath is toothless, that there was something shallow in the melee combat, that the combat was serviceable at best and pretty easy. So, like, I'm shout outs to Justin and Navster and Grace and the Machine and everybody else in the forums and the email who had a similar experience to me. I'm not saying, I want to be clear, I don't think that I'm, like, especially good at this game. I am not dissing y'all either. I think that there is a range of play, and I think that both of our experiences should be like acceptable for this design, especially, and I think, Patrick, you talked about this before, that when this game originally came out, it came out to an audience that had not played what we often talk about as, like, the deliberate combat of the Souls games.
This is pre-Dark Souls 2, right, like, when this game came out. So it's like, it comes at a time when Dark Souls had created Like, you know, Demon's Souls was played by a small, not small, but like relatively small, like small relative to where like the Souls, as a genre has become, or Soulsborne or whatever you want to, Souls-like, is at this stage. Like, Dark Souls definitely expanded the world of people that were, the pool of people that were playing those games. And Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne has been like, it really hit in a larger way. So like, Zombie U arrived at a time when people were still kind of wrapping their heads around it, which is why I had wondered, I think when we had talked about this a different time, I can't remember if it was on a Waypoint Radio or privately, like, but that, like, because going back to Zombie U, having internalized a lot of what those games do, how they work, makes playing this game, I think, significantly easier, because it is, it also because it's, you know, like, because it only has one swing. Like, I think that is a deliberate choice on their part to simplify, like, its approach, like, making it so, okay, so we're introducing some complicated concepts when it comes to, like forced animation, like, animation priority, something like this. So, like, what if we do that, but only give you one attack? Like, I found that to be, at the time, like, there's two ways of looking at it, which is, one, that it's shallow if you have, like, great command over it immediately. I actually looked at it a different way, which is that it was a brilliant way to introduce people, to onboard them to like some really complicated game design ideas, so they could focus on one specific thing that was repetitive. They knew what it did, and then the game could build around that. Now, the idea of it having more complications, I think, could have been interesting, but I, at the time, especially, because I think part of this game is a product of its time, it was a really smart, interesting decision, because it just allowed people to wrap their head around the game in a way that they is a little bit easier to do in 2018.
Totally. And I think that's a totally valid way to have made that game. I think it's an interesting dilemma that speaks to, and we were just talking about this. Oh, we were just talking about this on the podcast that we lost, the David Simon quote, about how when The Wire was coming out, Simon, the showrunner on that show, didn't want it to come out in HD, because that's not what real life looked like, because that's not what the nightly news looked like. It looked like 3x4. It looked like standard definition. And today that statement isn't true for the bulk of the, you know, let's say, the American TV watching audience. HDTVs have filled the market. You know, Patrick, before we started recording, you were talking about someone locally on Facebook Marketplace or whatever trying to buy an SDTV, which, Rob, you noted, and is probably true, as someone who's looking to play some professional Smash on
a Trinitron. Please, let's be specific.
Yes, a Trinitron, a Sony,
the Cadillac of CRTs.
If you were in the Chicago area and you have a Sony Trinitron,
I can point you in the right direction. Someone will pay. They don't just want one; they want a bunch of them.
Oh shit! Okay, yeah, they're holding a tournament. You're right, Rob. And so, like, I think that there is I think that you're totally right that, like, at that time, it totally adds up. But it's interesting to think about out of time and place, where there is a player base who has engaged with something like Bloodborne, which is so complicated by the end, not just in terms of the weapons, but in terms of the enemy types. You know, at the time, this game has probably 7 or 8 enemy types, and I think that they're all pretty cool, but versus the first zone in a Bloodborne, which is not a fair comparison. Like, this isn't trying to be a Bloodborne necessarily, but it is a comparison that you intuitively make if you've played both of these games, because enough of the same parts of my brain are being engaged and are reaching for familiar things. There are no big guys who try to hit me over the head with a giant brick, you know, like, in the same way.
Where are the big boys?
That's what I'm trying to say. This game needed more big boys. But I still think it's an interesting game. Like, I didn't have a bad time with this by any means. I played through further than I was supposed to, because I was like, I'm really curious. And I'm glad I did, because the game got better as I continued on, for the most part. You know, I think that, like, after the Tower of London, the next, like, 2 or 3 big set pieces all did push me a little bit further. And, you know, maybe if I'd had more time and forced myself to play out the end, I'd be in a different place, because it would have gotten me another death or two. But I think narratively and, like, time crunch wise, I was just, like, not going to give up another night to this game, because it just wasn't over the hill enough for me. It just wasn't, didn't get me just there enough. So, that's where I'm at. Any other final comments on this game? Again, shout out to everybody who wrote in. If I didn't read your name out, I promise I read your email or your forum post. But any other final thoughts from the two of you?
Make a sequel.
You got beef?
Yeah.
I got beef with the game.
What's your beef?
Uh-huh.
The one thing I do wish the zones repopulated with zombies a little more than they do. Like there are they do repopulate slightly, but like only to it feels like they're quarter full compared to what they were before.
What if they filled more? What if they filled more the next time you came through? What if it was like twice as many zombies? And it's just like the supermarket's lost. Don't go back there; it's too dangerous. Unless
right, or like if you or you know the supermarket is going to replenish a little bit with items or something. So like,
or it's like each time you go in, it's like a day night cycle, or like they're it's like, hey, for like the next hour in game, like you just can't go to the supermarket. Like go somewhere else, like that sort of like systemic changing would have been really interesting.
And that's the thing, like games have gone to school on this one too, right? Like Dying Light is 100% I think like in dialogue with this game to an extent. But the other thing is, because like it's moment to moment did become routine, and because you got way too comfortable fighting the various enemy types and dealing with those challenges, the game resorts to the door alarm trick way too many times, basically. Like, oh, you hit a trigger, and oh shit, you have to just hold out for 2-3 minutes while hordes of zombies come. That is kind of how it gates every single, like, act of the game, is there's a big holdout sequence, and they're, like, they're tense, and they're fine, and whatever, but, like, it's the same trick. Like, and it begins to become clear that, like, those moments exist because on some level they know that the in-between, the passage through areas, has become trivial. And that's maybe the thing I'd like to fix.
Yeah, I think
also, I use landmines a bunch, guys.
Did you?
Love them.
Oh,
fucking
man.
Love those things.
They're dangerous. Like, the one time that I tried to use one, I got hurt real bad. I didn't blow up, but I got hurt real bad. And I was like, no more landmines, not worth the risk. And then I didn't use them again until the arena fight.
They clean house, man. In that school, like where you have the horde of zombies, I planted a landmine in the kitchen. And threw the door open, like popped a shot off and was like, come get it, boys. And then vaulted over the prep table. And they don't do that. They go around. They came all the way around the kitchen over the landmine, cleared in like one hit.
Perfect. That's so good. I think it's my, all the XCOM we've been playing, I'm too afraid to use explosives around zombies. I'm just going to draw more. I'm just going to draw more in. All right. That's going to do it for us today. We don't have another Waypoint 101 to announce quite yet in terms of date or anything. So we'll be updating
trying to
people.
We were trying to hope to do it once a month, which is why it's like, hey, don't beat the whole game.
Yeah,
hey,
exactly,
we're going to only podcast for an hour.
We have some ideas.
Sort of,
and so we'll try to communicate pretty quickly on what the next ones are. So that we can start planning for those. I'm Austin Walker. You can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
You can find me at Patrick Klopik.
And Rob.
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
As always, follow Waypoint at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, and waypoint.vice.com. That's going to do it for us. We will see you on Friday for another edition of Waypoint Radio. Peace.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.